You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where 5 minutes alone in a room with Nasir sounds like the most terrifying horror movie of all. I'm your host, Justin M. Wisniewski, and I appreciate you joining us today. And if you enjoy what's going on here, tell a friend. Either that, or you can support us on Patreon, patreon.com/themidside, or themidside.com/patreon, in case you like confuse things and flip them in your mind like I do. Joining me this trip from our nation's capital, where America may or may not be coming unraveled based upon this memo thing or whatever, Daniel T. Richards.
Oh, the memo, the memo. No one can stop talking about the memo. It is either the most significant moment in American history or nothing, depending on who you talk to.
Well, I'm definitely in the nothing camp because I don't understand anything that's going on, and we're recording this on Super Bowl Sunday, so the most significant event in American history is Tom Brady going for his sixth Super Bowl.
That's pretty much where I am. We'll know more about this memo in the coming week, and maybe we'll talk about it next week, but as for this episode, don't expect much more talk than this, because frankly, you look at it and you go, okay.
That's about the reaction. And that's sort of... Right, and that's sort of what it's like to be in the midside, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and we just had this whole State of the Union, so you asked me to do a State of the Midside. Mm-hmm. You said, why don't you do that, a State of the Midside address? And I said, okay, but I don't really have much to say. So I have one word to sum up the State of the Midside. I mean, we always do this big convoluted thing for the State of the Union, right? The president comes out and talks for like 8 hours, but like, most of the 8 hours, like seven of them, are people standing up and clapping every time he says something. We're going to keep things much more simple here in the midside. The state of the midside is annoyed. And the best way I can sum this up is something that you said, Daniel. You said in the midside thread this week, or in one of the threads we have, either that or with midsider Michael and his wife Morgan. It was a thread where we raise all these questions in today's society. And the answer to most of those questions is, shut up, go away.
Mm-hmm.
That is why we are annoyed here in the midside. Because we waste time in this culture talking about things and focusing on things that don't matter. Now, I don't want everyone to get confused. During Trump's election campaign, he ran this whole thing about a wall. Now, as I explained to people, he never intended to build a wall. This was just a rhetorical device he used. And it was a rhetorical device to talk about how he was going to keep the bad out and keep the good in. That's all. It's just a mental image in the minds of his constituents. That's what he was creating by creating this idea of the wall. It was never real. It was never going to happen. So I don't want people to think that because we're saying the correct answer is shut up, go away, that it's a wall, that we want to make a wall for the midside. We don't. The midside is always balancing things, right? False dichotomy, bro. That's what we're all about. So instead of a wall, what I propose is a moat. What this does is it keeps the people out who annoy us, but if you ask the question or somebody asks them the question and they respond with the proper password, you put the drawbridge down, or you give them a piece of plywood, whatever, to get them across that water, and they can come in and join the midside. So that's what it's all about. When somebody asks the question, and you say, shut up, go away, you can cross the moat. Otherwise, stay on the other side. How's that, Daniel? Is that a good state of the midside?
Build that moat. Build that moat.
It's not a real moat.
Oh.
I just want to be clear.
Every time there's more farce, the moat gets 10 feet deeper.
Exactly. It gets harder to swim across.
That's right. And then we'll put alligators in it.
So it's infinitely deep, the moat, because as we know, there is no such thing as peak farce, which is actually great because you would think of peak farce as like a mountain, But if it goes deeper, it's like you're digging the culture into a deeper hole.
It's not peak farce, it's valley farce.
There we go. And you have to cross the valley farce like General Thomas Brady.
I thought like Hannibal over the Alps.
Any of those things, any of those things. All right, this is getting ridiculous. Oh, but God. I know what's more ridiculous. The news. Let's head into that in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
The State of the Union is weird. So declared Trump, not officially, but with his words. I guess those were words. He did string words together into what some would call a speech. I only watched snippets of it because I'm a terrible DC-ite. I'm a terrible East Coast elitist, is really what I am. But most of people in DC did. I was invited to a State of the Union drinking party, where there was, of course, State of the Union drinking bingo. That happens all over the city. Some people get really creative with it. Rolling Stone did an article called Trump's First State of the Union. Is it? Five Things You Didn't See on TV. And they list some rather interesting things. One, they note that the Capitol smells worse than a college dorm. Basically, the idea being that all these politicians and reporters are there locked up for long hours. This is the longest political day of the year as they get ready for this speech. Two, just about everyone on the Hill is getting drunk. My problem with this point, Justin, is that this is not relegated to the State of the Union. People should know that everyone on the Hill is drunk all the time. It is basically a frat party. We have 22-year-olds running the U.S. government. So, just know that. Number three, the rest of the city is pretty drunk, too. Again, all the time. Not relegated to the State of the Union. Happy hour is the only after-work activity in all of the District of Columbia, for anyone who's wondering. Four, lawmakers behave like little children. Again, not just today. And five, the Capitol is a fortress. That I can attest to. Everything around the Capitol is basically cordoned off during the State of the Union, and it is impossible to get anywhere, as it is most of the time in the nation's capital, because the roads are blocked just like legitimate legislative reform. Justin, did you watch the State of the Union?
I did not watch the State of the Union for two reasons. The first reason is I don't expect anything interesting ever to be said in the State of the Union. Like I said, I just expect it basically to be clapping and random standing ovations for no good reason. But the second reason is something you've already hinted at with this article. So this article is five things you didn't see on TV. To me, this article is five things that you know if you have any basic common sense. So we put a bunch of people in a city who are obsessed with how other people view them and getting power and attention, and we don't give them much to do except tell other people what to do. Do people really expect them not to be drunk, high, and fucking all the time?
That's right. I forget who said it, but a famous writer, maybe H.L. Mencken or something, said that Washington, D.C. is Hollywood for ugly people. And it's never rang more true than in the current administration.
I mean, so, if you think about it, Trump is kind of the apex of ugly people in Hollywood, right?
Oh, yeah.
Now, I'm probably going to get some pushback from a few listeners or someone out there will get pushback. Look, I'm not saying Trump is hideous, but I'm saying compare him to the rest of Hollywood. He's definitely on the lower end of the scale looks-wise in Hollywood.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's no Harvey Weinstein, that's for sure.
Well, that's a different story. But it's more than just the fact that DC is Hollywood for ugly people. This is something that's sort of disturbing in our culture in general. It's the whole summer camp phenomenon. Mm-hmm. It's the whole when you go on like a retreat or you go on like a trip with people. What do people do at a summer camp? Like, what do kids do at a summer camp, like high school or college kids when they go to, like, a camp?
I assume they get drunk and have sex.
Right, because it's a new group of people that you're not used to, and it's outside of your normal life, right? It's where the whole what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas thing came from. People have this idea that if you're disconnected from your normal everyday routine and the concretes of life, then you can disconnect from your abstracts of life, your morality. And that happens at these things where people go to like trade shows around the country for their industries. They'll start like hooking up and stuff. And well, is it a surprise Olympics. That's right? Okay, yeah, exactly.
It was reported something like that this year they're having a record number of condoms per person. It's like 37 condoms per Olympian.
Yeah. So again, especially not a shock there because they're like super physically fit, right? I mean, they're the prime people to do that. But the idea is when you put people in a place where they're going to stay for a time limited amount of time, that was redundant. I'm sorry. But where they're going to stay for a period that's time limited, they change the way they approach things in their mind. It's like, oh yeah, I can just completely like not do what I would normally do because I don't have to be as cautious. And that's what the government is. Yes. We've created a system where these people who have fucking problems, and your Harvey Weinstein point is well taken here, and we put them together and we don't expect the Capitol to smell like a frat house and for them to be drunk and fucking and then them to use the military to protect themselves and barricade in.
Yeah, it's true. It's one of the most transient cities in America. No wonder 75% of DC residents are single. So it's interesting.
I mean, if you were going to work for the government, right? Now, I'm not saying you because, you know, you're married and your wife is pregnant. And I'm not saying like me either because I found the woman I want to be with. But I'm saying if you were younger and you knew you were going to go work in D.C. for 4 to 8 years, would you get into a relationship or want to be in a relationship when going to D.C. knowing these facts?
No, probably not.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, speaking of, terrible government people, a California teacher was put on leave. A California teacher was put on leave after calling U.S. military a bunch of dumb asses. Thank you, Justin, again, for choosing a story where I can't read because I'm trying to be less profane.
Hey, it's not my – it's the culture. It's not me. It's the culture.
2 weeks in a row.
And blame Midsider Morgan.
MF-er. Okay. A California school district has put teacher Gregory – on administrative leave after a video went viral in which he can be heard calling U.S. troops the lowest of the low and a bunch of dumb asses, according to a new report. He is also a city councilman in Pico Rivera. Don't know where that is. And he was removed from the council's committee after local officials condemned the comments, which were made to a group of high school students. So essentially, he was harassing a student who was saying that being in the military was a family tradition and something he'd always wanted to do as a child. The teacher responded by saying, "So if it was a family tradition to beat women, would you continue it?" So clearly, you know, strong on the logic side for him. He said in a longer quote, we all have night vision goggles, all that kind of stuff, and we don't freaking control these dudes wearing freaking robes and chankless. Because we have a bunch of dumb S's over there. I don't know what a chankless is. Think about the people you know who are there, your freaking stupid Uncle Louie or whatever their dumb S's. They're not like high-level thinkers. They're not academic people. They're not intellectual people. They're the freaking lowest of the low. Was he quoting Shakespeare there, Justin? Because I couldn't tell. It was so elegantly worded.
That's about Shakespeare, according to the California public education system, I think. Yes. I think that's how they translate Shakespeare from his native version of English.
Yes, there you go. So what do you think? Does he have a point? Is he an idiot? Should he have been removed from teaching?
He should be removed from teaching because he's a bad teacher.
Oh.
Look, I'm not interested in debating the point about the military or not. I don't know. I've never been in the military. I've known some people who've been in the military. They've been fine. I don't have any problem with them. They're nice people. They're good people. They're not particularly dumb. They're not particularly geniuses, although I have met some smart people who have been in the military. So I'm not interested in debating that point. What I'm interested in talking about is how poorly this reflects the education system and specifically the California public education system. So a student in your class says a family value. And says he's getting his values from his family. Now, again, you're an individual. You should come up with your values on your own. You shouldn't necessarily just do what your family wants you to do. And just because it's tradition in your family doesn't mean you should do it. But is the classroom the right place for having that debate? I don't even... What is this class? I don't know.
I have no idea.
Do we know?
It's not, okay. It's not noted in here.
Right. It's not. Well, it's certainly not a family history class. It's certainly not a history of the U.S. military class. It's not a personal philosophy class. So what business does this teacher have passing that kind of judgment on this student and then going on a rant to tell these impressionable high school kids what he thinks of the military? This is just somebody who's interested in getting attention. This is narcissism. He just wants to be in the front of the room to tell people what he thinks and have these kids repeat what he thinks because he's an elitist due to his narcissism. He thinks he is superior to these people who are in the military, and he is going to make sure the student knows that. Now, think about having this kind of person teach high school kids. Are these kids going to get a good education from this teacher? Now, we're not even talking about right now. I'm not even talking about a good teacher versus an average teacher. This is somebody who isn't even good at his job. He isn't even filling the basic requirements of his job. That's why he should be fired. That's why he should lose his job. It shouldn't be about his opinion. It should be about the fact that he voiced this opinion at all in an improper context and voiced it, as you said, in an uneducated manner and also didn't say the other side. I'm not going to lie. I tutor and I say my opinion sometimes, but I always say that's my opinion and I'm not telling you what to believe and this is what other people believe. I had a student bring up the other day, just out of nowhere, I was asking what good is and how do you decide what good is? And then a kid randomly just goes, self-interest. And I sat there, my jaw dropped, and I sat there for like a minute and thought about what to say. And I said that, and I go, you know what? I agree with you, but other people don't. This other student mentioned that, you know, caring for other people is what matters, and look at someone like Mother Teresa. I didn't sit there and go on a rant about selflessness, about secondhandedness, because that's not appropriate to teaching them. If I'm teaching them the etymology of a word and where words come from and their meanings come from, I handled it the proper way. It's not about not having an opinion. It's just making your goal the students' minds and their education. And that is not this teacher's goal. And it's disgusting and scary.
Unfortunately, basically all of education has become essentially what this teacher is. And I don't even necessarily mean the political side of it. What I mean is all of education has become the teacher says the truth and the students must accept that in order to move on. There's very little critical thinking. There's very little hierarchical knowledge whatsoever. There's very little induction whatsoever. It's all deduction because the teacher espouses truth and the students should fill their minds with that truth and move on uncritically into the next phase of education. This, sadly, this high school incident just reminds me basically of my entire college experience and most of my grad school experience.
Hold on to that. That we have a nice Reddit on Reddit, which will help with that.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
But I want to reinforce what you're saying, though, and I want to add a little bit to it. I agree completely that it's what the teacher says is the truth. But what I want to be clear about is they are not saying the truth as in line with reality. It's not as if they're teaching them gravity and saying you must accept gravity.
No.
And it's not like they're proving gravity to them. The example I have is I was teaching the structure of an essay and how to write an essay. This is the same class where the kid busted out the self-interest thing. And I'm teaching the structure of an essay. And I'm doing it based on reality. I'm explaining to them the principles of it and why you have to write in this way and why it's the best way. And I'm also saying your content should be your content. And then a student asked me and she goes, well, what if a teacher gives me a bad grade or doesn't want to grade me well for writing in this way? And I just stopped and I said, unfortunately, you're going to have to decide if you want a good grade or you want to write well, because that teacher is more concerned about you writing like him or her than she is about he or she is about you writing well in general. I said, I write the way I write. I just want to teach you guys the structure. I want you to write however you write because you're different people than me. And that's not interesting to me if everyone writes like me. But unfortunately, these students are put in, the truth is just whatever is true relative to the teacher, which is even worse.
And that's what I mean. Certainly, I don't mean that we have, Aristotle and Plato espousing knowledge and kids are accepting that unthinkingly. What I mean is that we have social justice warrior Marxist idiots espousing what they assume is the truth, or what, even worse, what they would say is their truth.
Right.
And then kids are supposed to accept that verbatim and do not question it whatsoever. Move on. Write it on an essay, perhaps, to show that you quote-unquote know it, and then move on to the next level. So.
Yep.
All terrible. Speaking of terrible, Tom Brady is not terrible. But
what was I going to say here? What happened? Yeah, you fucking trolled me.
The cultural reaction to Tom Brady continues to be bizarre and idiotic. In fact, a kiss between Tom Brady and his 11-year-old son has now, here we go, Justin, raised questions about parent-child affection. So here we go. This is from CBS New York. There was a moment on the Facebook docuseries Tom vs. Time where Brady's 11-year-old son walks into the room and asks essentially if he can check his fantasy football standings. I guess Tom Brady and Gisele Bündchen regulate the amount of time their children spend on screens, which is good. So Tom Brady replies to his son, well, what do I get? And apparently this is something that is normal within the context of their relationship, because his son Jack walks over and kisses his father on the lips. And Brady reacts by saying, that was like a peck. So his son returns, leans over and kisses him on the mouth a second time, a kiss that was longer and prompted responses from Twitter users such as, I'm a little uncomfortable with that, or I think at a certain age it's like, okay, you can kiss them on the cheek, you can give them a hug, but not in the mouth and not for that long. So Justin, is Tom Brady abusing his child, his boy child, by kissing him on the lips?
Oh, I was going to say he's abusing him by setting him such a high standard that he can never compare to, that he's just going to hate himself.
Oh. He's abusing his son by being Tom Brady?
Yeah. I mean, obviously. I mean, that's the point of this article, isn't it?
No. Well, I will let you tell me what the point of the article is.
Before we address this whole kissing parenting thing, I just want to ask a question that's sort of hanging in my head, and it always has, but this scene from Tom versus Time brought it to light. How do you play fantasy football when your dad's in the NFL? Like, isn't your dad going to get mad, especially if he's Tom Brady? Like, if your dad's Tom Brady and you don't have Tom Brady on your fantasy team, like, how do you do that?
It's true. It's kind of funny, though, to think about. Who you draft for quarterback there? Cam Newton. Like, really? Cam Newton. Okay. All right.
Or Peyton Manning back in the day.
Exactly. Exactly. But that was reflected kind of in the episode where his daughter talks about, what does she say at the end? Sometimes the Dolphins win and sometimes the Patriots win. It's like, go to your room right now.
Well yeah, Tom had the best response. It's like, we don't like them.
They're the bad guys
they're the bad guys always. I was like, yes, Tom, yes. But no, that's what this whole conversation is about, right? Tom Brady's parenting skills and if he's raising healthy kids.
Yes.
Now, in regards to the kissing thing in specific, I have one experience with this previously. Now, my family doesn't even hug, so it's all weird to me. Like, any form of affection between family members, I'm like, they like each other? Like, that's allowed? You can say you like each other? So for me, it's all weird. But I remember during my college years, I would work at Walmart during the summer. And at one point, this was a white family as well, so that's something I want to be clear about, because there might be some sort of cultural things. But at one point, this white guy was saying goodbye to his young son, I believe, and he kissed him on the lips and walked out of the store. And this woman, who was the greeter, this older woman from Peru, and I say older, she must have been in like her 60s, who spoke very broken English, came over to me and was like, was that wrong? Is that weird? Like, that's strange to me. And at the time, you know, before this Tom Brady story broke, at the time I was just like, yeah, some people do that, whatever. It's just them. I go, there's nothing weird about it. Like, just on the lips, like it's showing affection, whatever. And she was like, oh, okay. And, you know, she recognized she was intelligent. It's just she came here later in life. And even though she had a good job in Peru, she just came here later in life. And, you know, this is what she does now. She's a greeter at Walmart. Hopefully she's still there doing that live. I don't know. I haven't talked to her in years. I haven't been there in years. But it's just she recognized it was a cultural difference. But now, because we're breaking everything down and everything's globalized, we don't even recognize the cultural differences within our own country, different regions, you know, New England versus the Southwest versus the Southeast, you know, the below the Mason-Dixon line versus the Pacific Northwest. We don't recognize any of these differences, middle America, right? We don't recognize any of these. And we especially don't recognize differences between cultures that have come here. We see this is a big issue with the whole Trump election and everything, with all the race stuff that's going on, right? This is why this alt-white movement has raised up or whatever, because people are saying, oh, everyone needs to be the same homogenized way of being. That's never the way this country's been. That's never the way any rational society is ever going to be. But that's where we're at, where people just complain and attempt to shame and then declare someone morally evil for being different culturally than them. That's what we use social media for now.
Mm-hmm. The phrase parent shaming did appear in this article, just so everyone knows. It's not parent shaming was the context. My family kissed on the lips, men, women, everyone growing up, not unusual to me at all. This is also something where, you know, one, Giselle is from Brazil, right?
Yes, Giselle is Brazilian.
Yeah, so probably not uncommon there. And then two, has anyone heard of Europe? Anyone? Europe? Happens all the time.
So this is the one time it's not okay to be like Europe?
No, I mean the kissing on the lips is a huge European thing. Like it has.
Well, that's what I mean.
Oh.
Everywhere else in our culture, it's like, well, Europe does it.
Oh, I see. So now they should be thinking that a little more. And especially like the southern parts, like the southern region of Europe, Italy especially, very kissing-centric culture. It's fine. Here's how you can tell this is nonsense. If this was, and I think Midsider Morgan brought this point up, if this was Giselle kissing her son on the lips, would this be a story? Would we even think about this? Would it have crossed our minds to discuss it?
Nope.
No. And then the other element of this story that I want to point out, which is, this story is an attack on someone who is great, because we have to continually attack people who are great. It has nothing to do with the kissing of his son. It has to do with the fact that he's Tom Brady. If Tom Brady didn't kiss his son, the headlines would have been, Tom Brady withholds affection from son. If Tom Brady had kissed his son just a peck on the lips, HuffPo would have written something like, that peck is a serious affection withdrawal, and we need to talk about how we show affection with our children, or something like that. So, basically, person of great talent does something, let's find an angle to take them down. That's really what it is. So.
Oh, 100%. And if we look at elsewhere in the episode, I'm always moved to tears by the Patriots and Tom Brady, but I was moved to tears by how rational the parent-child relationship is. I don't know, let me ask you your experience watching the episode. The scene where his son is sitting in his lap and they're watching film together, and his son is like, is this how you get better? You watch this film and you get more information and that's how you get so good at football? I was like, oh, how old is this kid? Like 6, 8? I was just like, fuck, this kid can understand that at 6 to 8. If this isn't proving that we're fucking children up with our education system, how much does he understand that other people in the NFL don't understand? By watching his dad. And then the conversation they had was completely rational. The voices weren't raised. They just exchanged information. And this is a 6-year-old with a 40-year-old, and they're exchanging information like two equals as adults.
Yeah,
I was flabbergasted
to say that I don't think Tom's children act irrationally at times. I mean, they're children. It's sort of definitional, right? But it was a very positive father-son relationship, and I've seen nothing in the series that indicates that all of his children don't have that with him and Giselle. So for more of this hot Brady talk, check out Belichick Your Premises, the sports podcast from the Midside.
Well, I just thought we would end with the Brady story while we're recording on Super Bowl Sunday.
Yeah.
Especially because I would say now is sort of Valley Brady. See what I did there instead of Peak Brady? But no, what I mean by that, we're heading into Super Bowl Sunday. He could potentially win his 6th title. Tom versus Time is coming out, which is basically a documentary split into... Is it only 5 episodes?
I think it's only 5 episodes. I think the final one aired was released today. I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah, so it is released on the day we're recording this episode, so it'll be out by the time you listen to this episode, Midsiders. And it's worth watching. I mean, it's good. It's better than a lot of what's out there. And it's a documentary. They just decided to split it up. So there's a lot of interesting cultural things going on around Tom Brady, which is why I decided to end the news with this story.
Well, why don't you tell us what other interesting cultural pieces are out there?
In regards to the Tom Brady thing?
No. Regards to culture, arts.
Oh, that's, oh, you gave God. Me a that's a transition you were giving me.
Wow, Justin.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Sorry.
Sixth? Sixth season.
See, okay. You say sixth season, and I hear six Super Bowl, so I get really confused.
That's right.
All right. Yeah, that sounds like a great transition. So why don't I do that in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. For the reviews this week, I'd like to talk about a couple movies that I've been excited about for a while. We talked about them for Trailer Takedown. I believe you wanted to see one and didn't want to see the other. So I'm going to ask you if you've seen either of them yet, Daniel. Well, the first is The Commuter, which I believe you didn't want to see. And the second is Den of Thieves, which I believe you did want to see.
Is Commuter taken on a train?
Yes.
Haven't seen it. Won't see it.
Ah! And Den of Thieves, do you remember that? The Gerard Butler movie?
I suspect that I did hug anything Gerard Butler is in, but I haven't seen it, though happy to see it when it comes to my home and I do not have to go anywhere or exert any energy.
Okay, well, that's probably fair as far as when to see it. But both of these movies are sort of old school throwback action movies. And I think these movies both would have gotten more hype if they came out 10 to 20 years ago in the 90s or the early aughts. Because I think a lot of action movies now are looked at differently because of the preponderance of big, huge action movies like the comic book movies, right? Where everything is world ending. And neither of these are world ending movies, but they are action movies that have consequences. So The Commuter is exactly what you just said. It's taken on a train. It's starring Liam Neeson. I also compare it to something like Under Siege, which is, of course, the Steven Seagal version of Die Hard. And if you remember, Under Siege 2 takes place on a train. Did you ever see Under Siege 2, Daniel?
No, but I did hear that the working title for this movie was Taken Shrugged.
Taken Shrugged. That's a good one. That's a good one. So what happens is Liam Neeson is fired from his job as an insurance salesman in New York City, and he's like 60 years old and his son's about to go to college, so he needs money. So he gets on the commuter rail back to Long Island, and Norman Bates' mother, Norma, approaches him and says, if you kill one passenger on this train, if you identify the passenger and kill that passenger, then you will get $100,000. Now, Liam Neeson is a former cop, and the entire movie is him trying to figure out what's going on. And it actually ends up being this giant conspiracy where there's this witness on the train, and he has to figure out who the witness is, and they want him to kill the witness to protect the conspiracy, and he goes into full, as you said, Taken mode. Christine did point out, my girlfriend did point out, that he's getting a little too old for this. And I go, you just saw the trailer for Death Proof starring Bruce Willis. If Bruce Willis isn't too old for this, Liam Neeson isn't too old for this. And to me, he's not too old for this because we need more movies like this. It was very tense. It was very exciting. It was very enjoyable. There's nothing I can really say was terrible about this movie. There's a theme in it. It's not 100% integrated, but it's integrated well enough. The one problem with this movie is it seems to be left wide open for a sequel, and I don't know if that's intentional, because the depth of the conspiracy is never explained. How deep does the conspiracy go in the valley? Does it go all the way to DC? Does it go somewhere else in the world? It's not really explained. It's just sort of a MacGuffin at the end, is there was a conspiracy that was able to manipulate everything. And that's unfortunate because it undercuts the plot of the movie ultimately. Still, it's worth seeing. It's an enjoyable movie.
Most now, of the time, you can tell if someone is too old to be doing action movies because in the action movie, they say, "I'm too old for this."
And he doesn't say that.
Oh. So he's
and
still,
he actually...
No, it's fine.
Although right, no, he's fine because he becomes a cop at the end. So they actually, this is one of the things I liked about the movie. Sam Neill in the movie is the police chief, and people kind of don't like him. But at the end of the movie, in a very self-aware line, he says to Liam Neeson, he's like, "You know, we miss people like you." And it's sort of like a commentary on we don't have the John McClane, Clint Eastwood characters anymore.
Hmm. Interesting. I do look forward to the sequel, Commuter 2 DC Metro, except that he never gets to his destination because the rails catch fire.
What about Commuter 3 LA, where he like uses it, but there's no one on it, so there's no danger, and everyone's like, "Why are you using this?"
He's on it, but he can't actually get to any place that he needs to go because it doesn't actually go to any useful stop.
Right. He just goes from like Long Beach out to bumfuck east of LA.
That's right. Yeah. Or he gets on at Culver City and tries to go to LAX, and it takes him 4 hours.
And he has to like change to the flyaway bus and everything. Yeah. All right. Conversely, though, a movie that does explain everything and it has a very good denouement is Den of Thieves. Den of Thieves is starring Gerard Butler as the head of major crimes in the Sheriff Department of Los Angeles. It mainly takes place in the South Bay of Los Angeles. So having lived there, I've lived in the South Bay. When I lived in Torrance, it was really interesting where they were like, Torrance, San Pedro, Long Beach. And I'm like, I recognize all these places. It also stars Pablo Schreiber, who plays Mad Sweeney on American Gods. Very, very good actor. Basically, Pablo Schreiber's character, Merriman, is a former military guy who has a crew who's trying to break into the Los Angeles Federal Reserve and rob it when that's never been done. And Gerard Butler, similar to Liam Neeson's character, is the one competent cop who's trying to figure out how to stop him when nobody else believes he can do it, including the FBI and his wife. Now, here's the thing I'll say about this movie. Without giving anything away, because I don't want to give anything away, because this is, it's good plotting, and it's good acting, and I don't want to give anything away. But what I will say is, you have to be patient, and you have to watch the whole thing. Because it seems to want to pretend to be naturalism, but I think that's kind of the point. Because a lot of the time, they talk about how Gerard Butler's going to get divorced, his wife serves him with papers, and you see that he's drinking. And in order to combat these criminals, he has to become part of the criminal underworld to a certain extent. But then at the end, the way everything pays off, there is a point for all of this setup. And it really pays off. So it really is worth seeing. It's a great performance by Gerard Butler. It's a great performance by Pablo Schreiber. Everyone in the movie is pretty good. One interesting thing about it, Daniel, that I really want to see how you react to, it's something I noticed about half an hour, 45 minutes in. I leaned over to Christine and I go, there's not really a score to this movie, is there? There's very minimal music. And it was a very interesting choice. And usually when there's not music, I have a hard time being engaged. But I didn't have that problem at all. It was very much focused on the characters, the way they were interacting, and what they were deciding to do. And the lack of music really sort of underplayed the seriousness. Usually music is played to add weight to it, but the lack of music was used to add weight, and I thought that was a very interesting choice.
Interesting.
Because when music does break through, it's part of the world, right? Like when he goes to a strip club, there's music, or when he has the radio on in the car, there's music, and it makes the lack of music more real. It's very interesting. That's what I mean, where it seems like it might be naturalistic and you can interpret it that way. But once you get to the end, you're like, okay, it's definitely not naturalism. So definitely I think it's worth seeing.
You know what I watched on the flight home today from Florida is Valerian.
You finally Valium, saw that?
Valium, yeah. In the City of a Thousand Snores.
Yeah.
My brief review of it is it's basically Star Wars Avatar, The Last Na'vi.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
And it's not worth anyone's time. Why you should watch this movie? You're stuck on a plane coming home from Florida.
It is until the end. It's just it goes completely off the rails at the end.
Yes, love conquers everything. Even nuclear weapons can't be beat by love.
Yeah. All right. So there's a movie not to see and two movies to see, especially if you're in line with the Midside. I think Midsiders out there will appreciate The Commuter and Den of Thieves. But let's talk about what's going to come out.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
Mute is a Netflix original movie starring Alexander Skarsgård. You may know him from True Blood. He played Eric Northman. He is the tall and really built Swedish guy who I believe was a model originally. I'm not really sure what the plot of this movie is, besides the fact that he is mute and everyone is obsessed with him. That is what I took away from this trailer.
I just wanted to get him to say one word.
I liked how in the trailer they had the scene of him screaming underwater at the, near the end of the trailer, like it was epic that he was trying to make any noise. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing, though, that I will say about this. I like that it's a writer-director doing this movie, and I like that Netflix is taking a risk on these type of things, just like they did with David Ayer and Bright, which was successful in spite of critics, and I think this might be the same way. So for me, I think this is the definition of a Netflix and hug.
Netflix. What about you? And hug.
This couldn't have looked and sounded more like a Netflix movie. I don't know how else to explain it, but it has every hallmark of a Netflix movie.
It could have sounded more like one if he talked.
Perhaps, but having a mute lead character is very Netflix. So that being said, it actually looks somewhat interesting and hug. Has to be better than Amazon's original series, Electric Sheep, which is it's based off of Andy Dick book, which the book is very good and the series is terrible.
You mean Philip K. Dick, not an Andy Dick book. An Andy Dick book is just like vomit on a page.
You see, I have a problem when people share the same last name. Didn't I just do this with the first name with Gloria Steinem when I met Gloria Allred. You can't share a name. You have to be a unique individual. Otherwise, I just can't. There are too many of you, so stop it. Okay.
I'm just trying to picture what a book written by Andy Dick would look like. How he would write a book. Like, wouldn't he pass out, like, into the first sentence?
Just be scribbles and then a bunch of blank pages.
I mean, maybe he could record an audiobook, which would largely be silence between him. When he gets high, he's recording. When he passes out, it's silence. And then he gets high again and he's recording. He could do an audiobook like that.
That's right. Gayest audiobook ever. Hug.
Wow. That was a left turn. I thought you were going to tackle the shit out of that.
Wait, it's coming.
I will say this, though. You say that this is a Netflix movie because the main character is mute. Have you seen the trailer for A Quiet Place where the entire premise of the movie is you can't make noise or monsters kill you?
Doesn't that also star Alexander Skarsgård?
No, it's John Krasinski and his wife, Emily Blunt, I believe.
John Krasinski,
yes. Yeah, John Krasinski, yeah.
Alexander Skarsgård may be the next Pokemon evolution of John Krasinski, though.
Oh, definitely, especially since John Krasinski tried to put on muscle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like he's trying to be Alexander Skarsgård. Yeah, definitely. Right. But no, that movie, A Quiet Place, I see that trailer every time I go to the movies now, and it looks terrible.
Yeah. They used don't speak. It was super effective.
I want to sit in a theater for 2 hours while no one talks.
It's sort of the opposite of going to the theater with my wife.
And then yeah, exactly. That was the one movie I would want to see with Fyza.
She would narrate the entire fucking thing. Effing thing. Damn it. One.
It'd be more. We're going to have a counter on the website from now on. How many times has Daniel sworn in season 6? And then at the end of the trailer, they say hashtag survival is, and it's like a wipe, and it reveals, and it goes. It's not survival, it's silence is. And it goes, silence is, and then it goes, survival. Why would you not have the tagline be silence is golden?
Yeah.
Fucking, it's just terrible. All right, let's move on.
Please.
Second trailer.
The Hurricane Heist is about a heist in a hurricane. I love it. There's a reason I love this. This is by the same guy who directed Fast and the Furious and directed Triple X. Now, on the Facebook page, I said, can you guess what Justin's favorite thing about Trailer Takedown is this week? And I'm going to give you the answer to that question now. I love that the logo for Fast and the Furious and Hurricane Heist are the exact same fucking font, and they just inverted the colors between the white and the red, and they flipped it. And then they put up Triple X, and it was the same fucking font as well. Look, this movie, you ready for a left turn, Daniel? This movie, I have no idea who the villains are in this movie. All I know is it's Maggie Grace, and then the brother from True Blood. So the first two trailers today have male actors from True Blood for some reason. It's just a coincidence, but it's a funny coincidence. Ryan Catan, he's either Australian or from New Zealand. Maggie Grace and Ryan Catan, I don't know how to say his last name, trying to stop a heist in the middle of a hurricane. Would never see Maggie Grace as an action star. But here's the thing. I love that this movie just wants to be what it wants to be. It just is what it is. Like, even this end, the end of this trailer, right? The trailer, and there's a point in the trailer where Ryan K is like, oh, this is a hell of a day. And you're like, okay, that's it. That's the button at the end of the trailer. But it still, it continues, and it goes 600 billion stolen at 600 miles per hour. And I'm like, that was completely unnecessary, but that sealed it for me. I am in
hug.
OMG, no. No. How burned out are our pleasure centers as a culture when we can't do a heist movie? We have to do a heist movie in a hurricane. Frankly, all I thought was just a hurricane, not a hurricane filled with ravenous sharks. A shark-a-cane heist. Nothing, you know, the hurricane wasn't caused by massive global warming. Like, why can't we add another terrible premise on top of this? This is one of the harder tackles I've ever had to make.
Tackle.
Oh, no, come on. It's not pretending to be anything other than it is.
Yeah, and what it is terrible.
I don't know. I just appreciate the fact that in today's day and age, someone can make this movie and be like, you know what? This is just a heist in a hurricane. Go
see
it.
This is coming from the guy who loves Pacific Rim, okay? This looks terrible.
Oh, I agree. It does not look good, but I will see it because, you know what? It's a heist in a hurricane. Oh, by the way, if you want to see a good heist movie, Den of Thieves is ultimately just a heist movie. So there you go, Daniel. There's your heist movie.
Wait, no Avalanche? I'm out.
Nope.
I'm out.
But it's alliterative. The hurricane heist. That's why they decided to do a hurricane.
Oh, God.
Third trailer.
Hereditary is a story about a family who is haunted by the old mother figure after she dies. That's about all I could get from this trailer. This trailer is literally the least scary trailer I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, usually in horror movie trailers, even in the Quiet Place trailer, like, they showed it before Den of Thieves and some woman jumped and everyone laughed at her for jumping. But, you know, there's the whole thing's silent, and then there's one, like, jump scare with the audio. That's at least some sort of craftsmanship to this. There was literally nothing scary about this movie. It was just like, okay. Now, I get they're trying to do, like, how trauma's passed down or something, and I sort of appreciate the ambition. But just this looked one of the worst for me ever. Tackle.
So, I don't do scary movies, generally speaking, and I won't do this one, spoiler alert. But I've heard about this movie from multiple independent sources now. And you bring it up this week, you're another independent source. But this movie made the Drudge Report. I had someone at work told me that someone sent them a sneak peek of this movie and it was amazing. It's supposedly like one of the scariest movies ever done. I didn't get any of that from the trailer.
Yeah, the trailer said, like, it's this generation's The Exorcist. And I was like, really?
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm just not into scary movies at all anyway. Tackle.
Final trailer.
Unsane is a movie about a woman who believes she is being stalked, and then she gets committed to a mental ward because of this, and she can't tell what is real and what is fake. This is another movie by a writer-director. I can't remember the name of the writer-director off the top of my head, but he's done some other stuff.
Steven Soderbergh.
Yeah, he's done some good stuff, right?
He's done stuff.
Yeah, but I appreciate the fact that he's a writer-director and this is his vision. I also appreciate the fact that this is about something that I think is important in our current society. So there's a lot of this kind of stuff online where groups of people who have this kind of condition that she has, where she believes this person's stalking her, so she has to keep changing her email and phone and everything and move. Groups of this exist online where they believe they're being gang stalked and stuff. So I think this is an interesting subject matter that has become more prevalent because the internet has enabled this kind of mentality. And I actually think it's done. The trailer looks like it's done in an interesting way. To me, I think this has potential. It could go one of two ways. It could be another Black Swan, or it could be the anti-Black Swan. So for the chance of seeing what this could be and the potential it has, I'm hugging.
Hug!
Aaron Brockovich, Traffic, Ocean's 11, Full Frontal, Solaris, The Girlfriend Experience, he made some shockwaves with that one. Magic.
Yeah, so he has talent. Oh, Magic Mike, though, is like the most naturalistic movie Channing Tatum's ever done. Yes, I've seen Magic Mike.
The Nick.
I like Channing Tatum, and my girlfriend was like, you have to watch Magic Mike. So we watched Magic Mike.
Okay. Well, that sounds like a certain experience you and your girlfriend have. Yeah, so there's all that. This movie. To me, the most frightening thing about this movie was not any of the frightening parts, but it's basically a cautionary tale for why you should read the terms and conditions before you sign anything. It's very South Parkian sent iPad. Remember that episode?
Yeah.
She accidentally commits herself to an insane asylum.
I thought that was interesting, but I also think it speaks to her mental cognizance. Like, I don't think she's capable of committing herself or not because she's so disconnected from reality.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't really like the way this was filmed. It's filmed almost like a hidden camera documentary of sorts.
The concern about it being naturalistic. It could be, like I said, it could be another Black Swan.
Yeah, so I'm not going to tackle.
All right, that about sums up the art section this week. Let's head on to finishing up this episode in Reddit on Reddit.
These things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, boring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't post it, but we will repost it.
First Reddit, and this bookends nicely with the story. And this is what I told you to save it, Daniel. Save it.
Zip it.
Save it for this Reddit. This is serious, and they want to know, Reddit, what's the worst thing you've ever seen happen at school? Go ahead, Daniel.
Do we both have the same answer here? Is it the education system? Is that our answer?
Basically, but I have like a specific story about it. So,
okay. I have a story too, but my general answer is just that terrible people tried to educate me. I mean, yeah, there was violence and sex and whatever, but mostly the worst thing I saw happen was terrible people trying to educate me. Multiple examples. The one I haven't told very often on the show is we had a physics teacher who was sort of known for teaching physics, and then he left, and we were stuck with a teacher who had never taught physics before. And so our entire semester-long physics class was go to class. Our teacher would tell us to read a chapter, and we just went chronologically in the book, chapter 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then at the end, we had to do any project we wanted. So I built a Kinex roller coaster.
This is really funny because there's a show out right now, a sitcom on NBC that I watched the first three episodes on Hulu called AP Bio, where a former Harvard philosophy professor is hired to teach AP Bio, and he doesn't care, so he refuses to teach it. He just goes to the class and talks about whatever he wants.
It's basically what happened. I literally learned nothing about physics in this class and somehow still got a B+.
Interesting.
My worst grade in high school, by the way.
Well, I was going to tell a story about teaching at Clemson. And I had a student who was a wide receiver on the football team. And he would literally just sit in the back row looking at his high school state championship ring, which is cool. It's like, okay, like, yeah, you won a high school state championship. You know, I'm a football guy. I appreciate that. Like, well done. But he wasn't being productive on the football team. And it was obvious he wasn't going to make the NFL. And, you know, at one point I told him, I was just like, You know, if you put an effort in the classroom, it's only going to help you succeed on the field because it's going to improve your mind. He never tried in the class, didn't get a good grade, and now he's not playing football anymore, so I have no idea what he's doing. But just to see somebody not care about the class that much, we can talk about the education system being the setup being as bad as we want, but it's also killing kids' desire to learn. Like I said, Tom Brady's kid in that episode had a thirst for knowledge and he had an understanding of it. We're killing that in these kids, and to see it from the perspective of the kids as well is just scary.
Yes, totally.
All right, ready to move on?
Education sucks. Let's move on.
Next Reddit, what makes absolutely zero sense to you?
Other than the public education system? Oh! two quick things. Having just returned from a trip to Florida, it still boggles my mind that people think that the TSA keeps us safe in some way and that we continually put up with increased nonsense. Basically, now going through a security line, one must take off one's shoes, belt, jacket, empty one's pockets, take all electronic devices that you might have packed anywhere out, take out any food items that you have packed out, any food, any and all food has to come out now. And the new one, the fun new one, is books. Any book you have packed or stack of paper must come out. Essentially, I must unpack my entire bag at the TSA line.
Is this a way of controlling what people read?
I don't know what it is. I asked them why, and they said our scanners have a hard time seeing through books and bags. It makes no sense to me that we put up with this and that people think that it keeps us safe in any way. Politician, whoever. It does not keep us safe at all. It's terribly stupid. And then the second one is rioting after sports victories. What the fuck are you doing? It's your town. Why are you destroying shit? Stop it.
SNL made fun of that with their skit making fun of the New England fans and the Philadelphia fans. Where they were the Philadelphia fans and were like, if we win, someone's going to punch a police horse.
It is your police horse, right? Like your city. Yeah. You're not going to Boston and punching their police horse. That would at least make some modicum of sense.
Yeah. Yeah, that doesn't make much sense.
Justin, what doesn't make sense to you?
To me, it's still the way people drive. So I have a story from this morning that's very fresh. This will always bother me for the rest of my life, right? So I'm in a parking garage, and I'm driving, and there's a guy in front of me. And I notice a spot on my left. And it's directly to my left. Like, so my car is perpendicular to the spot. And, like, the middle of my car is the spots to the left. The guy in front of me stops and puts on his left blinker. So I look behind me, and I was going to back up, but then there's a car on my bumper. Then we're at, like, the top of the turning to go to the next level. On the left-hand side, ready to come down the other side, is a car. Except the car in front of me is in the middle of the aisle. And he's got his left-hand blinker on, and he just sits there. And he's got his window down, and he's motioning that he wants the spot. So I roll my window down, and I go, there's a car behind me, and you have to move over so I can get around you. But he just sits there and keeps motioning to the spot. Till eventually he gets fed up and drives away and just goes up to the next level. I don't understand. At what point you think that everyone's just going to back up and let you get the spot? It's not that I wanted the spot. I don't need that spot. But it's just the guy behind me would have to back up. I would have to back up. And it's not like we're truckers with CB radios.
Yeah, difficult to communicate.
Right. So unless I got out of my car and talked to everyone and communicated with everyone that we had to back up to let this guy get the spot, it becomes more of a time suck to do that. So why not just drive away? I don't understand what goes through someone's mind to the point that they want that spot. Why do they want that spot so badly?
Because people are sort of weirdly wired to do a lot of effort for a little reward. And there's no better example of this than in driving anywhere, but also in parking in particular, where people will circle around the lot for 25 minutes to find a space that's 15 steps closer to the door than what they could have found 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, it's insane. And it's like, they think they're winning, but like he thought he was going to win by getting that spot because it was so close.
This is people who don't understand that their time is worth something.
Right.
So.
Their time, and as I said before, this is my one trick pony with the traffic thing. You are driving a killing machine. Act like it.
Yes.
You're not just endangering yourself, you're endangering other people. Act like it. Because one day, you're going to get hurt, and you're going to hurt somebody else. All right, this last run, it's a good one. It's a little different than what we normally do. In your worst moment of gluttony, what did you eat, and how much did you consume?
I'll go first again, because I don't have a great answer. Because here's the problem. I've dealt with weight issues my entire life. But honestly, 100% honestly, I'm not a huge over-consumer. My entire life, like going to a buffet, for instance, I thought it was an enormous waste of money. Because I just can't eat that much food. This is very contrary to the fat guy mentality, right? Of like, you see them and they're like stuffing their face, whatever, in movies and whatnot. I can't do that. I'm not an over-consumer. I might consume things that are bad for me, but I'm not an over-consumer. So like, literally, my answer to this is like, I think I ate half a pizza once and I felt horrible. But I don't really over-consume that much. So you picked an interesting question but you have the wrong co-host, really, is the answer. You should fire me and get someone who has more interesting stories.
Well, I think your answer is actually interesting because it sort of puts into perspective the weight thing, the way we talk about it in this culture. There's certainly the idea that people eat too much, which leads to overweightness, leads to obesity. But this idea of the obesity epidemic being because everyone overeats, I think it's more of an education thing and more of a how you handle your own life. It's more people don't eat the right things for their body type. You just have a different body type and different metabolism, and you didn't learn to eat right for it when you were young.
Correct. And it's so much more about what you're eating as opposed to how much you're eating. Most of the time. So, I don't know. Half a pizza is my answer, which is a stupid answer. But I ate half a
pizza
that's
once, crazy.
And I was like, oh my God, I felt so bad about it.
See, that's what's crazy about it, right? I can eat a full pizza. I can.
It's ludicrous to me. Ludicrous.
And look at the difference in our body types. And yes. I can eat a full pizza. That's insane.
Ludicrous.
But I did once eat way too much. So this was at McDonald's, and they were running some sort of a promotion for a movie. I don't remember what movie or whatever, but this is when I was younger. And they had a triple quarter pounder.
Whoa.
So I got the triple quarter pounder meal, and like you got like a special cup if you supersized it. So I supersized it. So I had the triple quarter pounder meal supersized. Now, as you imagine, this did not go very well. So, you know how they have the idea that back in the day in Roman times or whatever, they used to throw up so that they could eat more when they're being gluttonous?
Yeah.
Yeah, the riding in the car on the way home, I had way too much to eat.
Oh, no.
And I have never made that mistake again in my life. I've never ordered that much food again in my life because I learned it was pretty disgusting. So that was my interaction with gluttony.
It's horrible. It's horrible. It's horrible.
All right.
I once ate half a can of cashews.
That's like nothing. Oh, really? Are you kidding me?
It made me sick. I actually got poisoned from it. I forget what they call it, but there is a kind of poison you can get from overconsuming nuts. Not like a giant can either, like a regular can of cashews.
I think it's called chicken head when you consume too many nuts. you don't get that joke,
nope,
do you?
Not at all.
That's too urban for you. That's too hip for you.
Yeah, I can't. I'm not that hip.
Did you hear the oh my god?
No, but I can imagine it. Thank you.
I hope that one got recorded. That's funny. All right, let's wrap up this episode. What did you learn this trip, Daniel?
I learned that I'm a bad DC coastal elitist. And I learned that we cannot go a single week without talking about Tom Brady, which is okay with me.
I mean, to be fair, like, what's going on right now, you know?
Super Bowl. Justin, what'd you learn?
I learned that there needs to be more alliteratively named movies because I would see them just for the sake of the fact that they're literally alliteratively named. That's what I need.
Fantastic. Depending on what you learned this week, you can tweet us or not at The Midside. If it's gross, I really don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear your horrible gluttony stories. Justin's made me sick. Adam Carolla does this segment very rarely on a show called Hobo Power, which is where they have callers call in to tell them horrific smells that they've experienced, and then Adam rates them. And I have to fast forward through that segment of the show. I will throw up. So, that's how I'm wired. So, yeah, tweet us, Facebook us, Instagram us, Snapchat us, at The Midside, and by us, I mean Justin, because I don't check any of that shit. Damn it! Two. So close. If I reduce it by one every week, eventually I'll get there. You can also,
if you reduce it by one every week, you'd be at zero by now.
No, didn't I do three last week? So two this week, one next week. I'll get there. Okay, it's hard.
Can't you just say you're a millennial or something? Oh yeah, I swore, but I'm a millennial. Like, isn't that the excuse for everything nowadays? Yeah, I kicked a puppy, but I'm a millennial. I mean, yeah, I ate a Tide Pod, but I'm a millennial.
That's right. Oh God, don't eat Tide Pods. Okay, you can go.
No, actually, if you intend on eating a Tide Pod, go ahead. That's fine. We can do without you.
Go to themidside.com/podcast to hear all the archived episodes. We're in season 6 now, Justin. People can go back and listen to essentially 5 seasons, although the first season might be lost. I don't know. That's a lot of audio content that you can go there. You can go to iTunes, Google Play. And if you're at those places, you need to subscribe because we need more subscribers. And if you're already a subscriber and you want to go to iTunes anyway, why not go there and give us 5 stars? A 5-star rating helps us move up the ranks, beat out Welcome to Night Vale and other Welcome to shows that we don't like. And
The Beehive.
Welcome to the Beehive, whatever that is. I hope that's gone by now. I really hope that was a fly-by-night podcast. You can also help us by going to patreon.com/themidside. You like that? patreon.com/themidside. And choosing to give us money every time we produce a piece of content for you, so you can sign up and say, I'm going to give these guys $1 every time they post a podcast. And that helps us keep the lights on. It helps us pay for hosting. It helps us buy some advertising materials. It helps us eventually get me a microphone. So that my audio doesn't sound terrible every week. But if you can't do that, we get it. Money's tight, even in the Trump economy. So, you can, you guessed it, tell a friend. Tell a friend. I told several people this weekend in Florida about the show, and they all promised to tune in and listen. I had someone reach out to me on Twitter asking me about the stand-up comedian I recommended on the show. It's like, oh, God, people listen to this. I should be careful what I say. It's crazy. So thank you so much for telling a friend, but if you told another friend, we would thank you twice as much. So until next time, thanks to Liberty.me folks for syndicating us. I think they still do that. Libertarians, thanks. And enjoy the Super Bowl. Win or lose, Patriots, enjoy the Super Bowl. We love you. Talk to you next time.
Yeah, Liberty.me still syndicates us, and I think the libertarians will appreciate our anti-government rants in this episode.
That's right.
This concludes your journey into The Midside. I'm Justin Emelzneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day.